this job.
Cut it out. We're on tape. We have to stop. We're just discussing our different interpretations of the meaning of the word mundane, whereas I take it as a positive sort of affirmation of human beings living every day. I guess, again, it has its pejorative meaning now as the meaning that most people would associate with it, so I'm going to stop using it. We were in, though,
so
talking about...
What's different. Yeah, so the lab is going very well. I guess I'm feeling more comfortable. I certainly still feel like the new kid on the block, but... you know, just little things. I made my first joke in the faculty meeting, and you know, people laughed. I guess I'm feeling less under the microscope, mm-hmm. and I can just go do my work and live my life and pick and choose. And, you know, Berkeley, of course, has great charms, and so initially it's all very... new, or it's even strange, and you sort of get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are things that I like. Favorite places that feel like home now.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So moving, just physically moving, is very disruptive.
Yet you've really managed to bounce back, without a whole lot of ado, it seems that you've...
Oh yeah, it's been a piece of cake.
If you can't hear the tone of his voice on the transcript, it still seems quite 10 months. I mean, really, when I first met you, probably you were like, "What is the? Why are these people here now?" You know, and it's actually not turned out too. It's nice to see it. I don't know. It makes me feel like I participated in it. I do quickly when you say faculty meeting, just to get the facts down, because Berkeley has such a weird setup. Or different. You mean the entire MCB faculty, or you meant your wing of it, your third of it?
Of it, yeah.
Okay. So there's. Do they ever get together? The entire.
I don't know.
Just a few of the hoi polloi, perhaps. Right. So just.
Not that I worry about.
Not that they're telling you about yet. You were talking about. I mean, off tape a little bit about kind of the. As you get. More people in your lab, and as you get, you know, you find yourself in a maybe perhaps a more centrally located place like Berkeley as opposed to Salt Lake, just some of the adjustments that one makes. And I was wondering if you wanted to talk about some of those adjustments on.
Well, my group is already bigger than it was in Salt Lake. Means I have to be more organized. I work less in the lab. I write more.
Are you doing any? Bench work. I mean, are you really? Yeah.
Mostly computing things.
Yeah.
There's a lot more bureaucracy here, which I still find crushing. You've had some experiences with this that you told me about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is easier to get people to come to the lab, and so I guess. In retrospect, I realized I didn't design enough desks for the size of group that I could envision having. But I don't know, I'm being very cautious in the sense that I like to have the group run fairly smoothly. And at this point, what's limiting that is, you know, how organized I am.
Does that mean my time?
You know, I find myself... too easily distracted and too unwilling or unable to say no to things.
Mm-hmm. So I guess if I could get your, I mean, I'm almost kind of at a sense of what you mean by more organized, which I guess on the first space of it sounds kind of vague, more organized. That means what, you don't keep a date book and now you do. But I think what you mean is that you just concentrate and on the kind of, I guess you would call it management. Part, right, that you do say no to everything on the outside for, or you say more often, and concentrate on those things, I guess, that you feel you need to do and nobody else can do or something like
that? Well, I mean, organization means a lot of things, from just keeping this messy office neater to budgeting time. I think budgeting time is the main thing, is to really focus on all the things I have to do. Instead of just the one thing that's in front of my nose, and get that done, and then all of a sudden I'm swamped with 10 other things. I can't afford that. Mm-hmm. And so by budgeting time, I also mean delegating a lot of that to other people, things that I would normally do. Asking people to be more responsible. You know, if I ask a graduate student to have results by a certain time, you know, I rarely do that, but at this point,
or that if they did, they're not going to have results by that certain time, they better let you know in advance or something along those lines. Yeah.
Or I want... I had to look at some... I had to get some information out of some protein sequences, and it was a project that one of the students was really doing. And so, you know, I really had to say, look, I need this information by a certain time. And normally I would have just sat down and analyzed it myself, but... It wasn't something I needed to do.
That person certainly had the capability. Right.
She has the capability. It's in her project. She would be interested.
And she did it, right?
She made some mistakes, you know. So then I realized, oh, well, I have to...
Do part of it.
I have to even plan in the mistakes now.
Okay.
You know, I have to say, okay, I need it a week before I really need it, so then we can go over it.
That is
it's
different.
Just all these little things, mm-hmm. you know, delegating. And
have you got a situation going now, or are you in the process? Like, one of the lab techs or one of the postdocs is, like, in charge of the lab, or, I mean, have you started that kind of delegation? And
oh, sure. I mean, everybody has lab jobs mm-hmm. and things they take care of.
But that one of them's the head.
Oh, no.
No, that's you still, I mean. Well, I mean... I've interviewed some people. We're really the ordering, the day to day maintenance, the issues. You know, any kind of issues about space and use of equipment goes to a lab manager and not to a.
Oh, I'm sure.
To the PI.
A lot of that happens.
I think it's taken care of.
There are natural leaders in the lab, sure. But I don't stand up in group meeting and say,
right.
"So and so is the person you should go to first."
Okay. Does this recognition of the needing more organization, needing more kind of, attention to planning ahead all the things that are going to happen instead of dealing with them as they come up. Is that more of a challenge? I mean, is that something you take on willingly, or is it just something
that's... Oh, absolutely.
Because...
Sure. I mean, it's not... I don't have a choice. You know, even as large as my group is now, I don't have a choice of running it the same way I did in Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a lot of that is just because the bureaucracy at the University of California is so much more time-consuming that I just don't. There aren't that many hours in the day.
It's well in place, and it's 5 miles thick, and
exactly.
It doesn't it's move very easily.
Yeah, it's geological.
We should get some dynamite.
So, I've stumbled around with that. That's been a big problem in the move. It's just, in some ways, it's people not doing their jobs. But I don't have the energy or the interest in taking that on. I have to figure out how to manipulate it or use it or suffer through it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any illusions about.
And this, you mean again, is this bureaucratic?
Yeah.
Could you? And I'm not because I don't like the UUC bureaucracy either. Getting you to try. I really, you know, this is the pejorative mundane part. I realize, but you know, anything that really is. Again, an impediment or something that you need to now get not to be an impediment that you know looms pretty large that you see as an issue of scientists and academic scientists faces and that you know it's kind of therefore important in your.
I mean, what are some of the examples?
Hiring
takes weeks. Ordering takes months. If your thing doesn't get lost. Uh, just getting a room for a seminar is impossible. Well, I was thinking about a lot of things.
You don't have a staff. I mean, there really isn't either departmentally or you haven't written an integral. There's not somebody, in a sense, then who is going to be the one who pounds the requisition through step by step and make sure that it gets through so that the 8 weeks that it does take, it's only going to take the 8 weeks.
No, people don't have that attitude. I mean, you would think that the people that do that job would have that attitude, but they don't really care.
And that's a departmental sort of thing, I guess, then?
Yeah, departmental. It's university-wide.
It's whatever.
Don't step on my turf. I can take it. It's my job to get these orders out, so don't tell me how to do it. Getting lines from my computers has taken a year. And, you know, fortunately, we strung our own lines when we first showed up in the building, but then we used up all the connections, and so we needed at that point more connections that had been built into the building. It's taken a whole year,
for them to come in, bring the lines in, and then and drill the hole in the wall or whatever it takes, right?
String the cable. Mm-hmm.
And a whole year to actually do it, or a whole year for them to finally show up and do it in whatever long it takes.
To finally show up and do it. Yeah. I mean, it's absurd. Mm-hmm. Something that would have taken a week, 10 days in Salt Lake. You know, you go down to the computer center, you give the manager a 6-pack, say, "Look,
so that's
we're getting this computer delivered, and
we can't plug it in."
Yeah, we can't plug it in. You think that's really horrible? And he goes, "Oh yeah, no problem." Then you call the very efficient carpentry staff, and they come wearing their brown uniforms, and they just do it. Here, it's like another example. We had equipment delivered, and we had to put it on the 6th floor of the building. Well, the elevator only goes to the 5th floor, so I said, "Great, we'll just get the students in the lab and take it upstairs." And the head of the building goes, "Oh, you can't do that, because if someone gets hurt, we'll get sued." So we had to hire a moving company to come and move a piece of equipment up one flight of stairs. And, these are things that waste time. They waste an incredible amount of time. And
you just feel the circumvention of that, like, for instance, just finally having had your students move it up would have, in a situation like here, just not... That would not have flown. You would have got the...
Oh, they wouldn't let us do it.
Mm-hmm. It would have, like, prevented you, or, you would have been called up on it and,
Oh, well, that I don't care. I've been...
Called up on that stuff before.
Dressed down.
At every institution you've been... No. It is I guess, suppose frustrating when you think that, especially if it's impeding your actual doing of what you think you're supposed to... What do you think they're paying you to do?
I could give you some other examples, which are sort of strange. One of my students was mugged. She lives near campus. She wasn't hurt. Great, that. But as a result, she didn't work at night for months. We've got to come up with some solution of having, taxi money or something so she can get home.
It's escort service or...
No, the escort service stops 3 blocks from her house.
And they won't walk her the 3 other blocks?
No. I mean, I don't know what... These are... You're talking about adjustments, what's different.
And as you say, in your life where you've had to deal with it, it seemed easier. And of course, beforehand, this wasn't your headache, right? I mean, you were postdoc or something.
Well, I'm really glad I didn't come here to start my life.
Oh, good. again, you think to a certain extent, we're just kind of talking about this as a conversational thing. But the things, you've made the decision to stick with this lab running thing and being a PI and stuff, and it involves you having to deal with these things. So I think it's important. I'm not saying that where you sat and really, really scratched your head and thought about it for a month, maybe I should just retire or something, but I mean, these things kind of, you have to make the decisions to go
along.
There's
something going on in science that I don't really And well, I understand it, but I don't really understand it. Mm-hmm. And that is that I know a lot of people who are really smart, who do great work, who are genuinely burned out or depressed. And it comes
about how they do their work.
Yeah. And, you know, it comes from, this comment of mine is coming from your question or query about retiring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's not something that's so as light as you thought.
Okay? Well, I mean, but, oh, and I guess maybe that, yeah, okay.
The problem, you know, is that people do nice work, and it's still really hard to get money. It's hard to be recognized. It's hard to get good people. You have these crushing bureaucracies that you end up dealing with that you were never trained to deal with. You know, you're trained to do experiments mm-hmm. at the bench, not figure out how to circumvent the regulations mm-hmm. at the computer center or the turf battles that you go through or problems with people in the lab who aren't doing what they're supposed to do. So if you take if you combine how hard it is to really think everything up and actually get things to work with how hard it is to fund the work, it's leading to a great deal of unhappiness mm-hmm. and sort of malaise, I think, in the field now. And maybe you don't see that.
I guess I would tell you without prior experience, but just to hear people, actually, it's probably the most commonly talked about thing outside of publishing in Cell, or getting published in Cell.
Oh,
wow. But no. But that's part of the same thing, I think, too, that I've actually come across, and it actually, I find, is kind of depressing.
It's very depressing. I mean, even this
there is a malaise.
So I recently was a consultant at the Helen Hay Whitney Foundation meeting, which they have annually. And one of the board members rode back to the airport with me in a van, and he was saying that he's in his 70s, and he was saying that the young people in his place, it's amazing these days, they do the strangest things. They actually celebrate when papers get published in Cell and Science. And you know, when they get a grant, they have a party. I mean, we used to just, of course, you send in the grant, mm-hmm. you send in the paper,
true.
It gets published. You know, and the guy's like, wow, why are these people...
Now, is he not aware of that because he's retired?
No,
in other words, he's not doing it anymore.
He's not retired, but...
He's totally insulated from that?
He's not even totally insulated from it. I mean, so then, of course, I said, what do you mean? Blah, blah. And he knew it's there, but he's still...
He doesn't want to hear it, maybe.
He doesn't want to hear it, and he doesn't want to do it. You know,
or deal with it.
Yeah, he doesn't want to deal with it. You know, his papers still get published. And
because that's the second thing I've heard, and because, you know, people will say this. They'll say... You know, it really stinks the way the NIH, you know, it doesn't work anymore. You know, bozos from Iowa, excuse me, Iowa, there are great scientists there too, I'm sure, but I'm just picking, you know.
University of Utah, those assholes.
are doing all the reviewing. The real top-notch people in the field aren't going anymore. Why? Because, and now they're only funding 8% in my section. 8%? Well, you know, what does that mean? They're not funding 25 to... You know, 50 good proposals, and they're funding like 15, and that's, you know, you can't do science in that atmosphere. And I say, so what are you going to do about it? You know, what do you think you and your colleagues should do about it? It's peer review sort of system, and so maybe you have a say in it. And their response is, oh, we're too young. You know, we're in the crush and the crunch of this. We're just trying to get our next grant written, and hopefully it will get accepted or partially funded. I don't have the time. And, you know, and I don't have the influence to kind of do that. Yet you're describing a 70-year-old man who is the person who makes, you know, is at that point to do that. And he's almost kind of doing this denial thing with you about you're doing strange things instead of that's just what the reality is now.
Yeah.
Grant is worth celebrating.
Well, I mean, even this Pew money, they had this idea that it was going to be sort of gravy.
Well, I've done enough interviewing now with 1990 people to know that in some cases it's not gravy. It's going to get them through maybe exactly. 2 years of no funding. I mean, that's going to be it.
This is, yeah. It's more than one.
And oh, yeah. And I've only interviewed five or six. You know, no, it's...
Oh, yeah. And you know, they talk about this group as some select group and blah, blah, blah. I mean, if this is a select group, imagine what it's like out there.
In the trenches?
Know, well, everybody's in the trenches. Yeah. I mean, if you didn't have the 50K a year,
yeah.
I mean, it's horrible. So, retire, well...
or private business. I mean, I guess another way of asking the question more positively or is I've also guess I've seen, or I would say I have witnessed by talking to people, by just reading around from, you know, just news and gossipy stuff to doing a non-statistical study of where the people are, you know, where the acknowledgments say the money's coming from, that things are changing. In other words, that the funding gap that's being left, let's say, with the federal government, by NIH, by NSF, is actually maybe being filled up by private institutions, like nonprofit ones like the Pew, but also pharmaceutical companies,
the Army,
the Tobacco Research Institute, or whatever it's called. That perhaps there's, you know, there is kind of a reshuffling and a restructuring of the funding for research in this country, and that maybe it's not all dismal, dark stuff, but that's still going to change the way science gets done, because it will be Sandoz that's giving you the money. And
clearly one of the differences from the old days, if you were 70 years old, is the amount of time it takes to get a grant. Mm-hmm. It's so unbelievable. And you get it, and you just don't look back, because your life changes. The things that you have to do every day change dramatically. You get that letter that says you're funded. You get your second grant. Even people who are doing incredibly well worry about that renewal incredibly much.
Mm-hmm. So you're including yourself in this cut. I mean, you are.
God, I mean, who doesn't? Who isn't concerned in these days, you know, mm-hmm. about no matter how well they do,
right.
will the renewal fly?
But you are on an R01 that's the second go-round, right? In other words, you had a...
First.
Oh, so you're up, your first renewal is...
It's in a couple of years.
Okay, I guess I thought you were... But, right, okay. So you had a five-year... I mean, we've probably discussed this, but five-year grant, and then it's up for renewal in another year, another fiscal year you've got to go on. So you've got to submit your stuff this fall, coming up?
Two more.
Oh, okay. And you're telling me you're worried. I mean, you're starting, your palms are starting to sweat or whatever.
I'm very happy with the work.
No. Yeah.
But who isn't worried?
Mm-hmm. Do you see a place like Berkeley filling in the the cracks?
Zero.
If you get nothing?
Zero.
What do they do, just say goodbye? I mean...
This place is so broke.
Isn't it?
I know. You're in UCLA. What do you see at UCLA?
The UC system has cut its funding by 30% in 5 years.
So, yeah, I mean, there's some money there. We're trying to raise money that can do the sorts of things you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of money is what set up my lab when I moved here.
And what's, I mean, that's...
It was a grant from the Markey Foundation.
Okay.
That's...
And a one-shot deal, sort of, to start up this structural thing that...
So Dan Koshner was trying to get more, but they've always said, no, it's a one-shot deal,
mm-hmm.
so we don't know.
Then I've noticed that Pew is doing stuff like that, too. They've done it at Rockefeller. For the cell biology section, it seems that you see these occasional, and thanks, you know, there's this grant to the Rockefeller Foundation from the Pew.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Rockefeller is looking for that kind of money,
that's good.
and the Rock, you know, you think of the Rockefeller's endowment as a pretty solid sort of thing. But if they're looking for money,
I guess everybody is. Do you see that as a real I mean, is this kind of like, you think this is just,
you know, structural change, and there's going, you just you're hitting it at a bad time, let's say, or you and your cohort, you're in your age group and that sort of thing. You know, so the 70-year-old had the gravy train, and maybe things are tough now, but, you know, that science will still get done, basic academic research, and, you know, even if you read about what happened to the Super Collider and the Hubble telescope and, you know, and kind of like science taking a drubbing in maybe even the popular press, that still it's going to come back, and it's, you know, it's going to always sort of be there on the American scene, or do you?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's gone from the American scene. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're talking about the question, what it's like to do it. I mean, it won't be gone from the American scene because it's very practical.
Certainly, I mean, and of course, you kind of, your work kind of straddles that area too, right, as having, you know, being eminently applicable at some point, not necessarily by you or whatnot, but being very much so of that sort, that it would be of, you know, great interest to a lot of different private interests as well as government.
I don't think I really have any answers to the problems.
You don't see a solution or something?
There's some changes which always happen, you know, fields change, like you were talking about, new technologies, mm-hmm. or new approaches, and when new approaches come on, people that end up doing the old approaches are going to lose their funding, you know, because they're not finding anything
right.
new.
They're going to stop having people coming into their lab, and they're just going to
They're
going to go into the other lab. Right. And
then that's going to make a cohort of people who are unhappy, and then there must be something structurally wrong in the system. Blah, blah, blah. But I mean, some of the changes mm-hmm. are... It's very hard to get papers published. It's very hard to get funded. The people these days rarely do things without competition. Whereas, you know, to take the 70-year-old example, what you did in those days mm-hmm. was you started working on a problem and...
You wrote your 3 pages, sent it to the NIH, and your friend Bob looked at it.
It's not that. It's that it was much less crowded.
Yeah.
You know, you were telling me about this person that you interviewed, David Julius, who worked for 4 years to clone a gene, and when he was finished, somebody else had cloned the same gene.
Well, not quite. I mean, they kind of together. They finally ended up having to exchange some information so they could both kind of get it. So, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's not the same. I mean, in crystallography, it used to be that if you crystallize a protein, then people would leave you alone and let you go solve that protein. But now, it's very different.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even tell anybody, oh, I've crystallized such and such, because that tells them, oh, it's possible. So if it's very interesting, then they'll go try to do it too. So, you know, I mean, people who are postdocs now or graduate students now, they will not have had the experience of working without competition,
mm-hmm.
Even on important problems. Even when I was a graduate student, I felt I could work on important problems and not worry about getting
mm-hmm.
run over. And,
heck, even as an undergraduate, you got to work on sort of an important enough little project, you know, that somebody, I mean, that you were the one who kind of put it together or something, you know.
No, Greg was the one who put it together.
I meant just the actual physical putting together, because you went there and did it, right, and came back or whatever.
He did it, too.
Right.
Well, he did it. I helped.
Right. But, I mean, would an undergraduate be helping somebody like Greg Petsko? I mean, yeah, I know he was young at the time, but today would you, you know, take your undergraduate bottle washer with you on the... I you know what I mean. I'm just...
Sure.
So I think even that kind of experience is harder to come by nowadays at a young or impressionable age or whatever. Unless, of course, you know, you're really shy. Maybe this is a depressing note to leave things on. Maybe not. I mean, it's not totally depressing, but... I mean, you certainly have made this decision, and you know, certainly you think it's the right one to kind of continue on with this situation the way it is anyway. And at a UC, I mean, of course, when you showed up here, you know, in January, even then, I mean... The decision had been made earlier. Things weren't quite so dismal looking as they have been this year. I mean, this year's been Yeah. And it's only at UC. I mean, other universities are restructuring and looking for money elsewhere and maybe tightening their belt here and letting some faculty go in that department. But, you know, they did a study. There's not another state-run institution across the country that's done more than a 10% cut over 5 years. And, I mean, the UC is hemorrhaging. So we're kind of looking at the worst possible view and the economy of the whole state and all that sort of thing is bad. But do you think you made the right,
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we've had no ideas. My lab is running. My work is going fine. And certainly, you know, when you move, I've really had to ask myself, what is it I really want to do? And try to sort out. I've gone from having so few people in the lab and so little time that all I could do was the next experiment to really being able to think about, well, where am I going? What's interesting? What's not interesting?
Mm-hmm.
What is it I want to accomplish? So it's a change, mm-hmm. you know, and I like that. It's a good experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's very healthy. I'm learning a lot. I mean, I would say the UC system's in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I hear, it's only going to get worse, actually. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, yeah, there are problems in science that people are, what's the right word?
I think you hit it. They're depressed.
People are depressed for whatever reason. You know, it's not just people are complaining. It's
mm-hmm.
there's some real problems. But yeah, in terms of the move.
Still, you know, even as you say, moving to kind of the site of the real, well, of just again the kind of way that academia was moving, and certainly the UC was at the forefront of it, and perhaps maybe that's why it's suffering the worst sort of change as these institutions kind of face.
I have somewhat of a different perspective, but it's not informed is the problem, and you know this shrinkage at UC hasn't affected me personally that much because I've had a million bucks to go set up my lab and do research that came from the Larkin
mm-hmm.
Foundation. You know, this is great. Okay. I've taught more than I would have
mm-hmm.
Had the system not gone through this shrinkage.
In other words, you all have had to pick up more teaching to kind of make the faculty-student ratio stay the same or something like that. Yeah.
You know, so that's in terms
mm-hmm.
of it's a difference from
mm-hmm.
what I was led to expect, if you will.
Sure.
But, you know, I think the course seemed to go okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that was actually a pretty good experience.
They just tacked on a teaching assignment to you, your whole course, and you had to do it.
That was a piece of the course that I wouldn't have otherwise
done. Okay. Well, just again for factual purposes, what was the class?
Because
I know you were
taking protein chemistry, so it was in my field.
Okay.
It's a graduate course, about 50 students, 50 people.
In a graduate, I mean, this is
yeah.
And so this is a kind of a hands-on lab class.
No, it's not a lab.
This is
lecture,
straight out lecture. Okay.
And I did a third of it.
Mm.
10 lectures, 11 lectures.
In like 3.5-4 weeks.
Well, actually,
or you kind of switched it on. Okay.
Yeah, we switched on. So, and it went well, and that's all fine.
And it was done all straight out of the biochem department, I mean, just MCB, or not
yeah.
out of the chemistry at all?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the University of California, you know, they're cutting departments. The physics department's cut in half. They want to cut the art department. But
they're shutting schools down at UCLA.
Yeah.
Library, public, social services. There's a school of public service or social service, whatever it's called. I'm sorry, I forget.
Yeah.
Architecture.
And
education.
It seems to me that part of this is coming from the cost of running the system the way it runs, you know, the cost of inefficiently ordering, for example, the cost of having as many sort of safety
checks and balances. No balance.
The cost of building labs so that every single one of them is wheelchair accessible, so that someone with a wheelchair could work in the lab maybe someday. You know, it would be worth, to me, for example, taking 10% of the money that would be spent on that and using it, making a fund to retrofit labs so that people with wheelchairs
can, on an ad hoc sort of basis,
do it. Yeah, have it totally free, because it would save a huge amount of money.
Or it could, that money could be invested in, the interest could be used or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a wild top of the head idea, but the sort of legalistic culture here and the culture of people not working to produce a product to make the system run, they want to know what their rights are, and fuck you. You tell them to do something that not to do something they have a right to do. If you tell them to do a better job, well, you don't have a right to do that. You're harassing them. I just think that there's a cost. The things that are being saved compared to the things that are being cut don't make sense to me. And you know, it's not anything I worry about. Here I am, barely able to run my own group and get my own papers out and teach my own classes and, you know, find out where to buy stuff for my house and which store to shop in. these new things. But I find it strange to...
Well, you know, actually, think you have described somewhat of an effect it's had on you. I would say that although you don't personally know what's going on with the people who thought they had a nice running art program here, perhaps, and I know nothing about the art department here, but who are now kind of watching it, you know, as it gets slashed in half, realizing that, well, that's going to kill it because that's too much to cut it. I mean, you're cutting out maybe the guts and heart of it or something. But that, you know, you hear about it. Somehow it's, you know, I think that does probably add to your sense of, you know, well, people are kind of depressed in the world of biology right now in this country, I mean, or something like that. I think that perhaps it has its intended effect. I suppose there are bureaucrats here in the UC system who also know the art department's being cut in half and have a completely different response to that, right? I mean, and it's not from the sense of, ooh, it's not good to cut any program in half. I mean, that's going to kill it, right? As opposed to this notion of...
The budget for our building's been cut by 30% in the last couple of years, so people are depressed. I mean, you can do less, you know. So what do? Well, you go out and try to raise more money from other sources. So that's what we're doing.
I think it's been very hard to ask people like at UCLA to take a pay cut, which they're doing this year, 5%, after no pay raises for 2 years, and then still, with that, say, do a better job, be more efficient, save money for us, you know, make the system work. Okay? But you're asking me to take a pay cut.
Those things are connected. I mean, I'm very naive.
In other words, you could take the 5% pay cut and you're still going to work hard to make it.
No. I mean, I think if you pay people more, if you gave people a raise, they still wouldn't make the system work. I think there's a cultural problem. But
that cuts across the board, too. I mean, I think that probably includes certain people who are in a situation where their response to something is, yeah, not, oh, I'm, you know, you can't tell me to do that better, that it's not working. Yeah. I know what my job is. And there are still some others who are taking a pay cut who are always still thinking, how can I do my job better? You could cut it, raise it, you know, slice it five different ways. And they would be still, perhaps, yeah, as you say, that doesn't affect them so much as just the circumstances around them. They would read it as, oh, I've got to do better and be more efficient because things are in trouble regardless of what they did to their salary or something like that. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens and whether these kind of deep cuts really... kind of kill it. I mean, you know, a common response certainly from people like in the legislature, and I think other people who aren't, haven't got a vested interest in like a job at a UC somewhere or something like that, think that the fact that UC was really the stellar state program in the country, and you know, had these incredible things, you know, that it was about it, it needed to face up to reality, and so they kind of, I think, see this. It'll be interesting to see if it survives, really, in any way, shape, or form as a as an institution that was, you know, can be compared to its past, a place like Berkeley, or even a place like UCS. I mean, it's your, you know, in a sense, you really have a long kind of connection with it all, right? It is kind of, now that you've got me really depressed, we're coming to the end of the tape, and I don't, you know,
I think we're done.
I think we better stop now, even though it's not depressing. But I want to thank you for really what, in many ways, is one of the most wide-ranging conversations I've had, certainly with your history of science background. It's been a real pleasure, personally, just to talk with you. And thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you.